Kathleen Scammo, Western Energy Alliance.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us here today on short notice. I know you got a lot of things happening in Colorado and where you guys are located, trying to keep track of. Is it 13 states that you oversee? How many states are you overseeing nowadays?
Well, you know, the western states, but the general production is in about six producing states, and okay. We do a little in Nevada as well, but, you know, North Dakota and Montana on down to New Mexico, so.
Yeah, and so there's a lot being impacted right now from the federal bans, the federal leases, and just the whole rhetoric. So I thought we'd bring on Kathleen Scammo, because when I saw this you know, OPEC beg, and then they denied it, and all these just politics, we'll just flat out say it, there's a lot of politics going on. And so I thought of you right away, because you've been doing a really good job of keeping an eye on this, because your customers and your clients and your, you know, members, they're the ones who are impacted the most in this whole deal from where I'm sitting. So walk us through the last, you know, week and a half of what's been going on, because there's been a lot.
Sure. Well, actually, the White House gave us a gift last Wednesday when the National Security Advisor sent out a communication saying that he was encouraging OPEC and Russia to produce more oil. Now, it's one of the few times in the last 15 or 16 years that I've been at the Alliance where I've seen an energy issue crystallize so well in the public's mind. In other words, the public knows that this administration is all about calling everything a climate crisis. And the people know that they're going after the American oil and gas producer. You know, they shut down the Keystone Pipeline. We had problems with the Colonial Pipeline on the East Coast, and people understood what it meant not to have gasoline. And then the price of gasoline went up, as well as a lot of other, you know, lots of inflation in the economy. And people get the connection between energy policy and their lives when the price of gasoline goes up. So they know this administration is anti-oil, but then they saw this administration reach out and say they want Russia and OPEC to produce more, even as they're disadvantaging the American producer. So it was the few times in my work in the energy industry where I have seen an issue so clear, and everybody was talking about it, from your, you know, senators and representatives there in North Dakota, or Representative Armstrong there in North Dakota, all across the board, politicians, industry groups, average everyday citizens were noting that this administration is a hypocrite when it comes to oil policies and climate change. Because as soon as it starts to hurt the voter, as soon as those gasoline prices go up, they cave on their climate change policies. But it was one of the few times where the left didn't say anything. There was no pushback. There was nobody supporting the president. It was radio silence on the other side, because it was such a clear moment that voters get and that the average citizen gets. So it was really a gift. It will make it easier for us to navigate the environment over the next couple of years. It will enable us to navigate when Congress tries to do something or this administration puts out rules and regulations. We can point to this and say, wait a second. You're going to do this to us. You're going to make it harder for the American producer to produce oil and natural gas, but you're going to make it easier for Russia. So it's going to make it easier for us to navigate all these rules and regulations that are coming at us that are meant to shut down oil and gas. So it was a gift.
How are you, I guess, from your membership and just your perspective, how are you? The gift is a great way to look at it. Personally, I think it's another example of rank prejudice. We've been saying this for years, that I believe what's going on is nothing short of rank prejudice against the oil and gas industry. And that's a little aggressive and harsh for most people, so I don't bring that out too often. But, you know, you're a high-level thinker, so you can do what you want with that. But what's the main takeaway for a lot of these folks? I mean, is this false hope? Is this the momentum that we're looking for? And how should people continue the momentum? I guess, you know, what's next?
Well, politicians know that when the gasoline prices go up at the pump, that they start to lose votes. And that's why this administration panicked. And instead of self-reflecting and saying, you know what, let's call a truce with our American producer. Instead, they went and they went to OPEC and Russia and said, produce more. Because, oh, geez, I want to win the election in 2022. You know, I don't want to lose the House of Representatives. So we need to bring that gasoline price down so voters aren't mad at us. Well, you know what? They did. The damage is done. The voters saw what they're doing. The voters saw that they were that they're so anti-American producer, yet when it comes to their political hides, they turn to unfriendly nations that are not in our security interests. And that became all the more clear when people started to drop off the airplanes in Afghanistan on Sunday. I agree with you. It's familiarity breeds contempt. They are trying to control the American producer and put us out of business. But they know they can't replace the energy we produce. So it has to come from somewhere. So it was really a gift because it shone the light on the climate change policies. We all want to do our part to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and address climate change. But it's not going to be done by disadvantaging the American producer and driving us out of business. Because all we do is we displace that production overseas. It's not like people are going to stop driving their cars. I mean, and if they try to force that with their climate change policies, which the radical left does want to get you out of your car. The radical left doesn't want you to be able to heat your home and cool your home with natural gas. They don't want you to have access to that energy. But the politicians like Joe Biden understand that their political life depends on low energy prices. And, you know, and that's why it was a gift, because it put directly crashing together came climate policies that are just unrealistic with, everyday bread and butter issues of the average voter. And so that's why it was a gift last week. Again, you know, we're doing our part to address climate change. Natural gas is the number one reason the United States has reduced more greenhouse gas emissions than any other country, because we have increased energy or electricity generation from natural gas, and we've offset more emissions than wind and solar combined. That's not me saying that. That is data from the Energy Information Administration, which is an agency under the DOE, the Department of Energy. So every year they put out numbers, and we continue to displace more greenhouse gas emissions than wind and solar combined.
So I was up in Watford City last week, so it kind of kicked my butt a little bit trying to get caught up this week. I thought I saw something on Monday that the oil and gas industry was suing the Biden administration. I know that I got a release from you guys about Biden in the Interior Department failing to get their lease deadlines in defiance of the court orders. Are those two the same thing, or are those two separate things?
There's some differences. So as soon as President Biden signed the leasing ban, we sued in Wyoming. So that suit has been longstanding, and it is moving quickly towards the merits. So we hope to get a ruling on the full case in the fall. In about March, 13 states sued in Louisiana against the ban as well. And they went for preliminary injunction. We did too. The Louisiana one just got ruled before ours did. And so but a judge came out with an order saying, you know what, that leasing ban is unlawful. And he overturned it. Well, it's now 2 months and 2 days since his order, and the Interior Department hasn't held a lease sale. And in fact, we sent out a press release on Tuesday because we noted that Monday was the last day that statutorily the Interior Department could issue a notice of a lease sale before the end of this quarter. They're supposed to hold quarterly lease sales. They have now missed the deadline for holding another quarterly lease sale. So they've missed three quarters of lease sales in 2021. So we were highlighting that. Coincidentally, Interior just put out a press release saying, oh, we're complying with the judge's order, but we're still not going to hold lease sales, which is completely nonsensical, because the order was you have to hold lease sales. You cannot ban lease sales. But they are refusing to hold lease sales, and they did appeal the Louisiana ruling. So that's going to go up to the Fifth Circuit. I don't think it's going to fly with the Fifth Circuit either. The Fifth Circuit is going to stand by that ruling. And by the time the Fifth Circuit rules, we'll have another ruling out of the Wyoming District Court saying that that leasing ban has to be overturned. So the Interior Department is defiant about all of this. They basically said on Monday, well, we're complying with the judge's order, but the law gives us complete discretion and we're not going to lease anyway. It was just nonsensical. And what was interesting was they also went and said that they can't lease because they've got to do all this additional analysis on lease sales. Well, that's not what the law says. The law doesn't say you can just keep analyzing something to death and not hold lease sales. So we'll get another ruling out of another court. It's going to go up to the circuit court, and I'm sure that court is going to stand by the lower level ruling as well.
Tell you what, there better be some accountability in these courts pretty soon, or...
Well, there has already been accountability in that Louisiana court. Okay. It's now to the point where either that Louisiana court will hold them in contempt, or there's going to be another ruling out of another district court, and they cannot continue to just ignore that. So it's coming to a head. But the bottom line is it's another example of disadvantaging the American producer. At the same time, they're running to Russia and Saudi Arabia and other OPEC countries to say, oh, we need oil. We need oil because we want to win an election in 2022. Well, you know what? They pretty much already lost that election. People aren't going to put up with these high gasoline prices.
Well, and that's what I think is happening in all honesty. I think the kicking of the can and kind of, you know, just skirting these deadlines and playing politics with the stuff, people are getting tired of it now. And I'm talking about outside the industry people. They're just,
absolutely.
Yeah. And
that's why I'm saying it was such a gift, because it crystallized the point to the average American, the person who doesn't follow any of this policy stuff that we're talking about. But they know, because the messaging from the White House has been so clear. We don't want American oil and gas produced here in America. That's been clear. And then when they saw their prices go up at the pump, they get it. The voter gets it. The average American gets it.
Pretty remarkable times we're living in, you know, lobbying OPEC and Russia to increase oil production when you got all these companies just begging for work here. And it's just different. Like I said, I look at it as rank prejudice, but that's, I know that's a little harsh for the average person. So, well, I appreciate the time today. And anything else that we want to make sure people know before we get back to work?
Oh, we've covered a lot of ground there, so I think we're good.
I think so, too. I mean, it's 20 pounds of potatoes in a 5-pound sack today, so I appreciate you coming on and keeping us up. Keep up the good work, okay?
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.